In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know. We are joined today by a great guest, Sarah K. Spencer, who covers the Hawks and not just the Hawks for the AJC, right?
A little bit of everything. Hawks is my beat, but then you kind of pinch hit on different things, especially for those like 9 months when nothing was happening, you know? So I kind of bounce around a little bit.
Got it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we appreciate you coming on this podcast. And so we've been hitting on a few teams. So we're planning to do this all 30 or 29, I guess, other NBA teams. And then the free agency timeline moved up a little bit. And so we've been trying to prioritize certain squads, specifically ones that may have interest in Drew, whether or not that's still a thing at this point in the game, who knows, but definitely looking forward to getting your take on all things Hawks and Pelicans. Because those two fan bases of New Orleans and Atlanta love each other so much. So
yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. So to get started, do you mind just telling everyone what's your journey been like to cover the Hawks, cover Atlanta teams, any sort of, you know, biases with fandoms? Just feel free to share as much as you like.
Yeah, sure. So my condensed life story is I'm from about an hour south of Atlanta. So I did grow up in the area. Now I live like kind of more in the heart of the city in Midtown. But I graduated from UGA in 2016, always knew I wanted to do sports journalism. Luckily UGA has a program that fit me to a T. Like they actually have like a certificate program for sports journalism. So that's where I got my degree. And then, after college, I actually got an internship covering the Pirates for MLB.com, moved up to Pittsburgh like 2 days after graduation or something crazy. And that's what brought me to Pittsburgh. And then eventually I got a job in Pittsburgh doing kind of covering a couple different sports for the Post-Gazette. By the end of my time there, I was doing some Penn State football stuff. And then this job opened up at the AJC, and I had been kind of wanting to come home. I'm really happy to be back. Like, you know, I'm born and raised here. So there's something special about getting to return to your home state. And like, you know, it's not very often that like your dream job exists in your hometown kind of, you know? So that's been really awesome. I don't have too much of an NBA background actually. Like most of my background is in college sports, like college basketball, college football, that kind of stuff. And then baseball. So the NBA has been, it's been really fun because it's been like a new challenge. Like, you know, when it comes to like salary cap stuff, like I gotta study it. I gotta learn it. I gotta look at the spreadsheet stuff, you know, and go through stuff like that and learn it. So I didn't really grow up with any like big Atlanta fandoms. Like the Braves were really good when I was growing up, you know, so you can't help but to kind of be on board with that. But I didn't like grow up a Hawks fan, which I think is actually good because you can be super unbiased when you're covering the team and just kind of like call it like it is.
Yeah, for sure.
I've had the best experience like covering them so far, except for, you know, the pandemic. So it kind of sucks. I've been doing it about, a little over a year and a half now. And everything was going, you know, I mean, the Hawks were struggling, but then toward the end of the season, they actually did start to get a little better, and it was becoming a little bit more, you know, the games were getting a little bit better. I had adjusted to the travel schedule, which can just be brutal, as you know. So, you know, everything was going well, and then coronavirus happened and kind of derailed everything. So this will be my second season on the beat, but you know, like maybe my first like full season, but not even that, because it's going to be 72 games. So, it, you know, it's been a wild ride to start covering the Hawks, but it's also been good, because I'm like, you know, if I can keep my head on straight with all this, then I'm in good shape. But that's kind of my background.
That's awesome. I still remember. So my day job, I'm traveling a lot to Atlanta specifically. I've had a lot of work clients there. We have an office in Atlanta too, and I stay in Midtown a lot. And I happen to be in Atlanta for work when the Pelicans played their very first preseason game against the Hawks. It was Zion's first game, and I was there and kind of got to watch his first ever NBA non-summer league type NBA game in person, which was great. So it was, I think, maybe my first game in that stadium, which is our arena, which is cool.
They've revamped it a lot. It's been revamped a lot. They've done a lot of really good. I think they normally win a lot of like fan experience awards. So it's not a bad place to go to a game, go cover a game.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about that finish of the season for Atlanta. You mentioned they had started to figure a few things out. Unfortunately, not one of the teams invited to the bubble. They had that weird thing for a bit. They were saying maybe we all go to Chicago, which seemed like a bad idea from the start. And I think fortunately that didn't happen. But what are your impressions of the team? And we can jump to free agency in a second, or the offseason in general. But I'm curious your views on how they ended up.
Yeah. So the Hawks started out they just started out terrible, you know, because this roster, I think everyone is very eager for this team to be good, which is good. Like, they generate a lot of intrigue, you know, and a lot of that is because Trae Young is such a wizard. Like, they're, you know, you're on so many highlight reels, but they're not necessarily like winning. And a lot of that is because when you looked, like, I know there was some chatter about like, can they grab the 8 seed, or can they, you know, can they compete for a playoff spot? But when you actually peeled back the roster, which, you know, happens as you start actually getting games under your belt, the roster was not built to win. Outside of their core, they did not have many guys who could get you quality minutes. You know, they had a lot of guys who, like, a lot of people would be like, wait, he's on the roster? Like, Chandler Parsons was on the Hawks, you know? Like Alan Crabb was there for a little bit. Evan Turner was there for a little bit. Like, it just wasn't, they still had a lot of guys on the roster who they had like taken, they had acquired picks and like taken on this contract, you know? So you have a lot of kind of dead space, you know, on that roster that was not gonna cut it if they were gonna make the playoffs. But their core is actually pretty good. Like, that core of Trae Young, John Collins, Kevin Huerter, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, they actually had a pretty decent net rating, and that was a pretty good group of guys. A lot of the Hawks' problems, it wasn't really those five guys. Like, they had the worst three-point shooting percentage in the NBA. I think it was like 33.3. Those five guys weren't that bad, or were good. But the rest of the roster, it just kind of like falls off a cliff a little bit. Basically, you know, when John Collins got suspended for 25 games, that killed them, you know, because he's getting better defensively, but offensively, he just like cranks out numbers. Like, he's just a 20 and 10 guy. Kevin Huerter, who's kind of their 3-point sharpshooter, he got hurt. He wasn't himself for like the first 2/3 of the season, almost hardly. So they didn't have that, you know, production there. And then two of the other guys, Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter, were rookies, and they were, you know, they're kind of defensive guys, and they were asking, like, there was one period of games when we were out in LA and DeAndre Hunter had to guard LeBron James and then Paul George. And it's just a lot to ask for, you know, for a rookie. Cam Reddish got much better throughout the season. So by the end of the season, once John was back, Trae is not good on defense, but I mean, his production is like amazing. Obviously, he was like an all-star starter. So once they got John Collins back, once Trae was continuing to fire on all cylinders, those young guys got a little older. They really did start to play better. So, you know, they started off the season, it was like 8-32 or something. It was just tough. And then toward the end of the season, they ended the season on a run not all that dissimilar to the Magic, who obviously that's kind of like their line of like, can we catch the Magic, you know, because, you know, that's kind of the, if they can catch up to them and be on par with them, then you're going to be looking at, you know, contending for the playoffs. But so they ended the season pretty well comparatively, but it wasn't enough to make the bubble. And, you know, you kind of get it because I think they wanted that bubble to be as small as possible, but then also have, which makes sense, you know, you don't want as many, you want to limit the amount of bodies in there. But then I also thought the kind of play-in game structure was really cool. And that adds even more intrigue for a team like the Hawks, who is hoping to contend for the playoffs, but will they be right there or will they be on the cusp? Who knows? So yeah, I guess long story short, this team has a lot of promise coming into this year, but I mean, the roster is not filled out yet. I mean, there's still a lot of work to do with the draft and free agency. And I think that time will kind of tell where they're going to end up, what they're going to do. They've got a lot of potential. It's just like, how do we fill in these holes and make sure we have the depth to succeed this season in a way that we just really didn't last season? Like when Trae Young was off the court, which doesn't happen very often. But when he is off the court, they score, you know, they just can't score. And so they've got a lot of holes to fill. Like, can we find a reliable backup point guard? Can we improve that 3-point percentage? Can we improve, you know, our defense? Like, can we bring in some guys who would be good defenders? And I think that's something they'll keep in mind as they look to build out this roster so they can compete for the playoffs. Whether they'll make it or not, you know, we'll just see. But it's, they've stated it as a goal, you know, like Lloyd Pierce has stated it as a goal. A lot of the players have stated it as a goal. General manager Travis Schlenk has been a little bit more cautious, just kind of saying we want to see improvement, obviously, because it's his name as GM, you know. But yeah, that's kind of where they are. They have a lot of promise and they're optimistic. We'll just kind of see how the rest of these few weeks go. It's such a condensed process to, you know, actually getting ready to play December 22nd, which is so crazy. I can't believe that's happening.
Yeah. And I'll say New Orleans fans can relate to that struggle of, you know, starting from a hole because of injuries or whatnot. I feel like it's been an annual process for the Pelicans specifically. And it's hard to dig yourself out of it when you give yourself a hole, especially in the West for New Orleans. And so can absolutely understand where you're coming from there. And so, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious where you think this team's going to go, because we have heard rumblings, whether it's from the Hawks or from other newsbreakers around the league, that this Hawks team's trying to make some waves sooner rather than later. And so you can understand, like, I mean, take a look at Phoenix in the West making the trade for Chris Paul. I mean, they're tired of losing. They saw some really great signs in the bubble. They said, hey, let's use this as a jumping off point. Let's go to Chris Paul and see if we can make a push to the playoffs. And so I think that's really important for a team that's trying to sell Devin Booker on a career in Phoenix. It's, you know, even if you think the timeline's rushed, there are benefits to making the playoffs for your other, you know, and for Atlanta, I think guys like Trae Young and John Collins, showing them that that team can be a playoff team and show them some sort of ability to win games and buy into winning games, I think is important. So, I mean, what do you think as far as that trajectory of, do you continue to play it slow and accumulate assets and grow your young talent versus, not to say you wouldn't do that otherwise, but versus maybe expediting the timeline and trying to go be players and grab some guys like a Clint Capella who may help you win more now?
Well, I think that was, yeah, that's well said, because I think that the Clint Capella trade was kind of the earliest indication as far as like moves, as far as like trades and moves, that this team is, that the Hawks are kind of trying to be done with, you know, like I said earlier, like taking on a bad contract or taking on guys in exchange for taking in guys who are not going to play, you know, in order to have more cap space, in order to have, you know, in order to have picks rather. I think that was kind of the first indication that they were trying to be done with that. But at the same time, the guy who's actually like pulling the strings here, Travis Schlenk, has said that, you know, it does not seem like he is rushing. I understand there's a lot of rhetoric and a lot of messaging out there from a lot of people who are saying like the Hawks are trying to win now. I don't exactly know what win now means. Like, does it mean win more? Then yes. But I don't know if it means, you know, they would love to make the playoffs. That's a goal. It's a goal from a lot of, you know, by a lot of the players, which like, of course it should be like Lloyd Pierce coach. Like, of course they're like trying to win. Nobody likes to go out there and lose. But as far as from, you know, the actual guy who's like in charge of those moves, I do not get the impression that he's rushing. I don't necessarily think, you know, if they don't love this like free agency class, if they don't love, you know, they're not going to go spend money just to spend money. I really don't think that. I think that he's kind of being, I don't know if patient is the right word for it, but you know, I mean, he was really, I think that he's been pretty clear of like, you know, we want to win more. It's time for our decisions over the past few years. It's time for those to start paying off. Yeah, it's time for us to start winning more. But I don't think, he said a couple of times, this is not a playoffs or bust season. And they don't want to, they obviously don't want to spend the money just to spend the money on someone who they're not positive of. And then you end up in another bad contract situation, which is what they definitely want to avoid. So, I mean, I could see them going into this season. I could see them, they said today that, Travis said today, it's most likely they're going to stay at six. Which, you know, it's kind of a smokescreen. Like, I mean, that, you know, who knows if that's actually the case. But to me, that makes the most sense for them to do, to stay at six and pick someone who you think is going to, you know, kind of create some competition on the roster and compete for playing time right away. Like, you know, like there are guys in this draft who can do this, even though people have said this is not the best draft. I kind of think there's not a consensus number one, but I actually think there's a lot of guys in that top 10 range who are going to be pretty good NBA players. So yeah, I don't know if necessarily they're going to go out there and, you know, try to spend all this money at once. I think I see them still being a little bit patient, but a little bit aggressive too, depending on who's out there and, you know, who's available.
Yeah. So I think that's an interesting point. And the fact that, so the Hawks are one of the teams with cap space, and also,
so of course, they're going to be listed in every single trade rumor there ever is, you know, and so that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. It's because they have the space. So of course teams are going to, you know, our agents are kind of going to be like, hey, what about, you know, but that, you know, so of course they're going to be listed in everything, but that doesn't mean it's going to actually, you know, come through, as you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, even as recently as today, when Chris Dunn, declined a qualifying offer, it's like, Hawks.
Like, hey, that would go pretty well with Trae Young, huh?
Exactly. So do you see any scenario at this point? And we can kind of turn this into a discussion maybe around Drew or other New Orleans players, but do you see any scenario in which they're moving the sixth pick? So even let's forget going up or down the draft for a second, but do you see a scenario where they're going to say, all right, we'll trade the sixth pick and someone for someone who's making a lot more money, and they have the ability to do a lopsided trade and take on a lot more salary than they're sending out, which makes them easier to do business with than some other teams where they may have cap constraints. So I'm curious if you see anything out there that makes sense to you, Drew, or otherwise with that pick.
So regarding Drew, who I'm a fan of his game, and especially like if you were to think of like fit as far as X's and O's, I mean, the Hawks for sure need some help on defense, you know, like they must get better at that. That they absolutely must, if they want to, you know, win now, try to contend for the playoffs, whatever you want to call it. They have to get better at that. So I understand why that makes sense. I don't know though. So to me, it sounds like the players the Hawks are trying to go after are, they kind of fall into that Clint Capella age range. So 25, just turned 26. And they've said that we're kind of going for guys who we want to get a little older, because we found a way last year to get younger and that didn't go very well. So they do want to get a little older and like bring in some more veteran experience. But I don't know with Drew being, I think he's 30, right? I don't know if that exactly fits the mold of what they're looking for. Also for him, if he were to go to a different team, maybe he would want to go to a contender, you know, which the Hawks are not right now. They'd love to be, but they're still building, you know, they're not like at the beginning of rebuilding. Hopefully they're at the end. They want to say they're nearing the end of the rebuild. We'll just have to see, you know, when push comes to shove this season. So for me, I don't know if that makes the, to me, I don't know if I see that happening. But I understand why it would be out there. And like you said, the Hawks are going to be tied to any player who could like remotely fit, you know, like Chris Dunn. It's going to be like, ah, oh, what about the Hawks? You know, so I get it, but I don't know if for either party that makes the most sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes total sense. And I think, you know, a lot of the rumblings with Drew would also be predicated on the fact that Woody Beaulieu to sign an extension there, because he's got 1 year left and a player option.
So do you make that decision and then what happens, you know? So that kind of might turn into a risk that the Hawks don't exactly want to take, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so it definitely makes sense. And I think that there may have been smoke there at first, but once you peel back the onion a little bit, maybe it's, you know, if Drew is voicing, I don't know if I want to extend there. You know, you're paying for a 1 year rental for what? But that said, we you know, in New Orleans, I think specifically, I think we've realized the value in having the right balance of youth and vets, even on a rebuilding team. I mean, if you throw a bunch of 25 or younger players on a team together with no stable veteran presence there, you're putting a lot on your head coach and your coaching staff. I think it's important to have a mix. I think the guys like JJ Redick and Favors and Etuan Moore alongside Drew were great for that New Orleans team last year. And I think that's something the Pelicans have to consider if they trade Drew, is how do you replace that veteran presence in the locker room? And so, right. I feel like Atlanta may be thinking about some of the same stuff there.
Yeah. It's a good point. And to that point, I feel like I saw that last season where the Hawks, you know, they got younger and they also got maybe quieter, you know, like they didn't really have that vocal presence, especially on defense, especially when John was out, who, not that he's like older, but he's a very outgoing guy. I mean, they did miss that at times. And then I remember, it was so funny, I remember being in the locker room in Boston back when we could do things in person, remember? It's been a long time. But I remember being in the locker room in Boston when they, right after they had acquired Dwayne Dedman, who obviously had been on the team before. So most guys knew him. And I remember walking in and just being like, this is the loudest I have ever heard a locker room, pregame, because, you know, they've just got, the Hawks have a lot of guys who are, you know, just younger and quieter and still kind of figuring it out. Like they'll come out of their shells, I'm sure, but it's just a process. And that moment just stood out to me so much in my mind, because I was like, oh, wow, here we've got a grizzled outgoing vet, you know, and it was just, the contrast was just really funny.
2020 has reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes and Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
The wait is finally over. Football's back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win the season. From games, spreads, and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. I'm curious what you think might happen from the sense that maybe the Hawks don't want to go crazy and spend money in the free agent market right now if they don't think a guy's worth it. I think that makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, you've got space. Not many other teams do. There's a an argument to be made that you're going to use that cap space maybe in a trade to take on a player who might help you this year and help provide that veteran presence. And you can also take a, if it's a team trying to clear a space, you can take an asset or something along with it. So do you have a preferred option without getting into players, but that's too hard to predict that kind of stuff. But do you have a preferred general path for the Hawks this offseason?
Well, it's hard. You know, it's a good question. It's a little hard to say before Wednesday, just because I really want to see who they take in the draft, especially now that it really does sound like they're going to stay at six, you know? So because my answer would change so much. So for example, if they're able to take someone like, let's say I think honestly, one of the greatest scenarios for them is if they can snag Tyrese Halliburton, because he meets like all of the Hawks needs, or hopefully he would meet all of the Hawks needs at once. Good 3-point shooter, good defender, can play alongside Trae Young, but also back him up. So really it's almost like four needs like that you're meeting at once. So if they were to do that, then they wouldn't need to go grab, you know, a secondary ball handler or a secondary playmaker or something like that. If they go a different direction, and if they were to, let's say, not that this is going to happen, but just kind of spitballing, like if Onyeka Okongwu is there and he's the best player available and they take him, then, you know, they have Scalabissier is a pending free agent. So it's like, okay, mm-hmm. Are they going to hold on to him? You know, it's just so hard to stay at this point. But one thing that they do really need is depth. They just need depth. Like, I mean, they didn't have it at all last season. And then a guy gets hurt and it's just like, oof, you know, so I do really think they need to focus on depth moving forward. And, you know, that's probably something a lot of teams are going to be thinking about, not just them, because, you know, you're playing not in a bubble during a pandemic.
Weird season. Right. Exactly.
It's a weird season. So that's something that probably a lot of teams are thinking about, which I know the league is going to do some things to help teams out with that. Like, for example, the two-way mm-hmm. guys can, you know, stay up for longer and can play more. It's not ideal, but it might end up happening. You might end up, you know,
sure,
starting a two-way guy at some point, you know? So,
Knowing the Pelicans, I'm sure it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the Hawks too. They had such bad injury luck last year. But yeah, so depth overall is probably going to be something everyone's thinking about. But just from the Hawks' perspective, I know they're going to put a priority on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so last question, and I do want to get your perspective on the Pelicans and if there's anything that really there you think there might be. So putting Drew to the side, does anything that makes sense to you? But the Hawks have a pretty – as far as number of decisions to be made on free agents, they have probably less than your average NBA team. But is there anything that you think they're going to do that may surprise people regarding the guys they currently have that are free agents?
You know, not really, because most of the guys that they have that are going to be free agents, I don't necessarily see coming back. But I don't think that would be a surprise. I would think it would almost be a surprise if they were to stay. The Jeff Teague one is kind of difficult mm-hmm. to pinpoint right now, especially because he has such a history with the team. Like I said, depending on who they draft, the Scalabissier thing is kind of like, but you know, Schlenk has said he's tried to add him before and it just hasn't worked out. So he kind of seems like they'd prefer to keep him, but it just is kind of going to depend on what's happening with the draft. But I don't necessarily know if I see anything happening that's too surprising, because most of the guys who are free agents, not all, but you know, a handful of them kind of struggled. And you know, if you're trying to improve the roster, it's just kind of a situation where those might be guys you have to part with.
Yeah, makes sense. And I know Atlanta's not really a small market team per se, but I think they experience some of the same.
Small market team a lot. People will always say it's a small market team, and I'm like, maybe it feels like it, but this place is huge.
I get it, because I mean, speaking from from the perspective of a true small market team, I feel like they get called small markets because of how easy it is to go and get a big name free agent when the time comes. And I feel like there are certain cities and destinations that are more appealing, even though. So I feel like the small big market is kind of a misnomer, but that's what they're getting at. And so, you know, I can appreciate the fact that it is a hard decision sometimes to let free agents go that are coming from your own team, that are, because it's not necessarily a given that you're going to go and replace that type of talent elsewhere. So, but the flip side is you don't want to go and overpay that talent because of that. So that could be even more painful. So, let's talk a little bit about New Orleans. So, anything that, so first of all, any overall takeaways from their roster, from their performance overall, whether it was the start of the season, the improved play, and then the clusterfuck of the bubble for them was not pretty, but just curious what your general impressions of the team were last year.
Well, I think it's interesting. There's a little bit of a similar dynamic that they've got a lot of young, talented, intriguing guys, you know, like they kind of have, like the Hawks talk about their core five a lot of basically guys who they're building around or rebuilding around, and guys who, you know, it would kind of take a lot to part with them. Not necessarily that those guys are untouchable, but that it would take a lot to part with them because they really like those guys, and they've made the decision to kind of stick with them through it. So it seems like it's kind of interesting similar with New Orleans. They've got a lot of talented guys. I mean, I think obviously I'm burying the lead a little bit with Zion, who, you know, I wish we had gotten to see more of him. I wish we had gotten to see more of him, and that's disappointing. So I think he's gonna take anyone by surprise, because we all know that Zion's fantastic, you know, but I think having him consistently, it's going to be so fun to watch, like how he can really, like how the star of the team is just really, I just feel like that team is just going to trend upward, you know, with him, if not shoot upward. So mostly just young, talented players who I think are really only going to get better is kind of my impression of New Orleans right now. And then just kind of drawing comparisons to them and the Hawks. Obviously they're ahead of the Hawks, and they're, you know, a little better than the Hawks are right now, as far as, you know, where they are, you know, with their trajectory. But, you know, it's interesting because that's just kind of a team that the Hawks are trying to not emulate purposefully, but, you know, improve as well, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think, unfortunately, obviously Schmidt couldn't be on this podcast, but I think the reason he's going to miss it the most is because we've been trying to shop Lonzo to anyone who will listen. We've kind of talked about at this point ad nauseum about Lonzo, but just about how his role and the role that he sees himself having is not how we see him, and is not how I think a lot of people see him.
How do y'all see him?
So not as a point guard. Our perspectives on Lonzo is he's a transition point guard. He hasn't really shown the ability, the chops, to get to the rim consistently, to make plays in the half court. He's allergic to the free throw line. He doesn't make free throws. I mean, there's a lot of red flags there. But as a wing who can defend and shoot and really be a secondary creator, he definitely, if he can accept that role, he can be a damn good player. The question is, you know, will he do it, and when will he do it? Because there's financial implications there of depending on the role you have. I mean, obviously he signed with Clutch recently. I think he's very interested in what his next contract's going to look like. A lot of things have to go right for New Orleans to get a deal with him, an extension that makes sense, whether it's now or next summer. And so I think that we've definitely talked to a few different people about, you know, on these podcasts about whether or not he's a fit for those teams. But I do feel like Lonzo is an interesting case for Atlanta, given I feel like he'd fit pretty nicely with Trae Young. And so whether it's Lonzo or other players in New Orleans, I mean, are there guys you feel like could make sense in some sort of hypothetical deal, since we kind of agree that Jrue Holiday is probably not gonna, he would probably won't end up in Atlanta.
Right. The Lonzo one is interesting. And I do know that another one that people talked about for, not necessarily with the Hawks, but I guess in general, is Brandon Ingram, which that's just a name that came up so much, again, for obvious reasons. Cause I guess the narrative is like, he improved so much, but I kind of always thought he was good. I was like, Brandon Ingram's been good for a while. But with him, I don't know if, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's going to be a super high priority to kind of bring back. And, you know,
I'd be shocked if New Orleans doesn't keep him.
And normally with guys like that, you got to really overpay. And I feel, and that's kind of like to lure them away from that and that contract that they're on right now. So I don't know if I would see that happening, but I just think they'd have to overpay a lot. The Lonzo fit is intriguing. I don't know. Do you see him taking on, do you see him, what do you see his trajectory being? Like, do you think he is okay? Like positionally, like what do you see for him?
I think it's very, he's got to be in the right organization that can get him to buy into a certain type of role that he may not see himself as. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, he's young. I mean, he could improve in every area I just mentioned where I feel like he's not doing that well as a player. But mm-hmm. but also it's rare to see a player go from so far below average to even average in all these areas. You can get better. Doesn't necessarily mean you're certainly going to be great at it. And so mm-hmm. I feel like he could play nicely alongside Trae Young as a guy who can defend and also who, as of this season, he's developed a shot. And so he can, I'm not saying he's a guy you got to go out and worry about tremendously from 3-point range yet, but he made threes at a really nice clip last year. And I think the form has really improved, and I expect that to continue to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And so I could see that those two fitting nicely together in the backcourt. How it fits with the rest of the roster, I guess to be determined, but I really feel like it's about finding the right fit around a star like Trae Young. And so, it all depends on the cost, right? And what's on the table. And I'm not even sure that New Orleans is looking to trade him. And so I just, when looking at some of the younger players on the Pelicans roster, I feel like Zoe fits better on Atlanta than he might with a lot of other teams.
Mm-hmm. And that just goes back to what we were talking about earlier of like anytime there's a player who's, because this is kind of what the Hawks have, decided, to make Trae Young the centerpiece, which makes sense in a lot of ways, but you've also got to surround him with not just average defenders, but above average to like excellent defenders, Trae Young has also, he's made a couple comments about how he knows defense is not his thing. And he's made a couple comments about wanting to like really put in the work or having put in the work this offseason to improve conditioning wise and be able to play, 100% on both ends of the floor as opposed to just on offense. I don't know if it's conditioning that was the problem or if it's just, so a good example of this is like, I remember kind of toward the end of the season, which obviously was clipped, but the Hawks played Memphis twice in like 3 or 4 days. Like it was a really small period of time. And Memphis obviously was fighting tooth and nail to make the playoffs, to stay at eight or whatever it was. And the Hawks didn't exactly have as much to play for, maybe to put it, So I think some of it is just, I think some of the Hawks' defensive issues are just like when you're not playing meaningful games, it's harder to summon that, and not try to just like outscore everybody. But that stuff like that is kind of hard to quantify. So, as far as defensively, they do need to add some guys who are going to be able to help defensively, whether that's through the draft, whether that's through free agency, whether that's just, the guys that they have buckling down. And also I should mention, I'm talking about, defense all this time. I haven't even seen Clint Capela play. he was hurt and had that nagging heel injury. So he didn't get to play at all last season. So, it's certainly not all on Trae Young. Trae is the reason why they win at all, a lot of times, not exactly, but he's a big leader and a big reason why, they win. So it's not all on him, but defensively, they're going to have to surround him with guys who can kind of cover for him a little bit. And they didn't really have that last season. I mean, they didn't even have a center who could defend really, for a lot of the season. So I think Clint Capela will help them there, but you're right. They're going to have to add some defensive pieces, whether that's through the draft, whether that's through free agency, whatever it may be, because they can't keep, doing the same thing and then, expecting to win.
Yeah. Agreed. And I think that's similar to what New Orleans gonna be looking for this year too. I mean, they had a defense that was kind of less than the sum of its parts in a way last season. I think that with Derek Favors had some issues staying healthy, and then there's some mobility issues there, but he was still so much better than the next guy up. And so he made a difference, but I think that this team still has a lot of room to grow. Some of the younger guys, I think, you know, Zoe took plays off. BI was just not good overall on defense, but I think he's got, I don't think the book is closed by him defensively by any stretch. I think Stan Van Gundy's the right guy
to push this team. I really like Stan Van Gundy. I'll miss his commentating. I thought he did a great job like commentating, and I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. damn it. But you know, I mean, he'll do well in New Orleans, but I will miss his play by play.
Yeah, so, definitely same, but we're lucky to have him. And I feel like that it's going to be, I'm really looking forward to seeing what this team can do just based on no other roster changes, but see how they can grow. These young players can grow defensively under Stan. So I think we've hit on a lot of the big topics we wanted to catch up with you on, Sarah. So thank you so much for joining. A couple questions to close out here though. We've been asking everyone, your favorite and least favorite Hawks of all time. You can name however many you want, whether it's one or, you know, three, whatever you think.
Oh gosh, my favorite Hawks of all time. Well, I really like Dominique Wilkins, and he's also, he does, I forget if it's, I think he does play by play or color. He does, he's on the broadcast crew for the Hawks, and he's really a fun guy. He's really nice. He's obviously, like, you know, kind of big time, but he'll also sit there and talk with you about whatever, you know? So yeah. So there were a lot of times when we would be on the road and I would just like sit down at the broadcast table and just be like, hey, what do you think about XYZ? You know? And he would just like give me his thoughts on everything. Least favorite Hawk? That's a tough one. I don't know. I honestly don't know, not to give like a political answer. I don't know if I have a least favorite Hawk, but I do think there's going to be, you know, I do think it was funny how there were a lot of guys on the team last season who people would be like, wait, so-and-so's on the team, you know, but I mean,
Solomon Hill, just say it, Solomon. Yeah.
But it's the nature of a rebuilding team. Cause you take on all these guys. I don't know if I have a least favorite, but that does make me laugh whenever people would be like, wait, that person's on the roster. But yeah, thank you for having me. This was fun. It really was. It really was a good time.
Yeah, I feel like my answer to those questions are usually guys in a word, ball hogs, guys that I feel like are taking more shots than they should. Like I go back all the way to like for Gennaro Pargo on the New Orleans Hornets in like 07-08 when the Hornets were really good. And I feel like he was taking the ball from Chris Paul too much. And so like, those are usually my answers for guys like that.
I don't blame.
But yeah. It's a hard question to answer sometimes, but well, yeah, Sarah, thank you again so much for joining. Before we wrap, just please tell everyone where they can find your work.
Okay. Yeah. So my Twitter handle's complicated because I kind of have a common name, but it's @Sarah_K_Spence. So I'll say it nice and slow. But yeah, that's where you can find me on Twitter. Shoot me an email, shoot me a DM, say hi. I like that kind of stuff.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for hopping on, looking forward to following the Hawks and seeing if they continue to go on a similar trajectory as New Orleans. Should be fun to watch these two.
Absolutely.